How do you do, ma'am? Henry Swanson's my name, and excitement's my game.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome to Dragonreel, the fantasy film podcast. This is episode 28. We're going to be talking about Big Trouble in Little China. With me tonight in chair number two, she'd run the show, but there's a problem with her face. It's Sharon.
Hey!
What?
Really? I know where you sleep, mister.
I thought that's what you said earlier.
No, okay. I didn't say that.
No, all that's right. Why she can't go into the Wing Chun Kung exchange.
Right.
Oh,
right.
My goodness.
In chair number three, he really shook the pillars of heaven. It's Pete.
Yay,
no
Pete.
Horseshit, Chris.
No horseshit, Pete. And in chair number four, of No Flesh, Only an Evil Dream, it's award-winning and highly acclaimed author William Ray, also known as Bill. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing good. My soul swims in the blackest of magic.
I always thought that about you.
Hey, I thought that too. And Chris, in chair number one.
I am chair number one.
Yes, you are chair number one.
I am chair number one. My name is Chris.
Have you paid your dues, Chris?
Yes, sir. The check is in the mail.
Fantastic. Fortunately, I don't have to pin the back of your favorite head up against the wall.
You know, I've got a lot of favorite heads. It's really hard to decide on just one.
Are you including the ones you keep in your closet?
Yeah. I've got eight in a duffel bag.
You and Joe Pesci.
Yep. So this movie is from a while ago, from my youth, 1986. I was but a teen at the time. I did not see it in theaters, and it turns out almost nobody did.
I didn't either.
I did. I saw it in theaters.
Wow.
Wow.
It was a huge event in my childhood. It actually came out shortly before the Transformers movie came out, the original.
The animated one.
Oh, the animated.
Yeah. So I remember it well.
I was going to say the one with Peter Cullen, but never mind.
I saw this actually at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California.
Wow. Okay. In the theater.
Yeah. In the theater there.
Well, I saw it on video a short time after it came out, and I gotta say, didn't get it. I mean, I thought, okay, there's some really good lines in it, and Jack's a pretty cool character and kind of interesting in a sort of a doofy way.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get the whole point of the movie, which kind of was a statement on, like, our perceptions as a white audience.
Right, because he's the sidekick, so it's hard to picture Jack as not the hero.
You know, having grown up in white Hollywood, you know, with white Hollywood, I saw him as the hero, and I really didn't see that Wang was the hero.
I guess that was the biggest thing for me, was the fact that I'd watched so many Kung Fu movies on Kung Fu Theater.
You completely...
On the USA Network back in the day.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
That it made better sense to me, that I'd seen a couple of Wuxia films before.
That was another thing. I had no experience with the Wuxia movies.
Well, because most of the Kung Fu movies at that point that had come towards us had been, the way that John Carpenter put it, gangster films. Mm-hmm. It had been primarily, you know, about somebody who had messed with somebody else's school or was some kind of a mob boss or a triad boss kind of thing.
Okay.
Well, for me, you know, I had not really seen very many Kung Fu movies by that point in my life. Maybe a handful of you know, westernized kung fu flicks, Chuck Norris kind of stuff. But what really clicked with me was just the crazy exotic magic. And it didn't matter what else was happening in that movie. When that guy came down on the lightning bolt, I was like, okay, I am sold.
Wait, what guy came down on the lightning bolt?
The three storms?
Oh, the stuff I couldn't see. Okay.
Yeah, yes. And that was all another thing. So this, yeah. I think I might have said this for a previous movie, but this is now the newest movie where I don't think I've had to describe as much for Sharon as in any other movie.
Even Princess Mononoke?
Yeah, even that.
Wow.
No, I got what was happening in Princess Mononoke, strangely enough. The music and the just what they were saying.
Okay. So apparently the studio didn't get the sidekick thing either, because this movie John Carpenter basically turned his back on Hollywood studios because of their support for this movie, or lack of support for this movie.
They said they didn't
because it tested really well.
But they said something about advertising, that somebody
the
said...
The studio did nothing for advertising.
To Kurt Russell.
Right, and they really didn't. I mean, the advertising for this was so absent.
So yeah. How did
considering the amount of money they put behind it?
So well, how did you know about it, Pete? You said you went to see it in the theaters, and Bill, you said you went to see it. So
there are two movies that had come out, two Chinese movies that had come out that had one I had seen on I want to say it was like on Cinemax, which was called Chinese Ghost Story and had Sammo Hung in it. And then another one was called Fantasy Mission Force, which had it had Jackie Chan in it peripherally, and they kind of put him in peripherally so that they could advertise that it's a Jackie Chan film. And at that time, I had no idea who Jackie Chan was, so it didn't make any difference to me. But both of them were wuxia, basically ghost stories. Fantasy Mission Force is this guy who's a itinerant alcoholic who gets hired to save George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and I forget who other what other famous Americans that he manages to save. But the four of them are for some reason meeting together in China.
Okay.
And so he gets hired to save them from the ghosts that have kidnapped them.
Makes perfect sense to me.
And so this was one of those things where that was just so... I mean, both of them are comedic ghost stories, and they were just kind of rumpy and a lot of fun. And a whole lot of wire work, and I had never seen a lot of that before. And then when I saw the teaser trailer and Rain and Wang are flying around doing a sword fight, I was like, oh, I got to see this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So you were both into that. Or Bill, should I ask you, were you into the Chinese fighting?
I can't remember what I went with my father, and we had seen some movie, like, with the rest of the family, like, a month or so before, that had a trailer for Big Trouble in Little China. And I remember the giant cloud of green flame, and we both saw that.
Green
like,
flame?
Okay. Yeah. So we saw that and we're like, okay, we got to go see this. And so I went with my the rest of the family did not want to go to this. So it was just me and my dad, and we went and watched it, and we both loved it. Mm-hmm. And I could never figure out. I mean, I was reading up on it. They said in the theaters, it didn't even make back half of its budget.
Yeah,
it just got killed.
It wasn't until later that it got the cult following and started to make ROI on VHS tapes.
Yeah, and I didn't see it until a couple of years later.
Sort
it was
of
on
like
VHS.
Princess Bride.
I think it was probably 88 when I finally saw it.
Oh, wow.
My parents owned a general store, and we got videotapes as one of the things we were trying to make a little money off of.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and see, you learned something new about me.
That's super cool.
Yeah. And, bitch, what you don't know about me could just about fill the Grand Canyon.
Oh, yeah. Dang.
And that was one of my reference. That's where I saw it. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Good catch.
Thanks.
So,
this was actually the first VHS tape that I owned.
That's funny.
That's amazing. Yeah. So, who's going to summarize this movie really quickly?
Pete, tell us what's about. What it's about.
It is about China being here. It's about... No, I'm just kidding. Kurt Russell basically plays an Averman hero who drives into San Francisco, making a regular stop on his trucking route, and ends up falling backwards into a Chinese ghost story.
And he doesn't
in which
really
there are sorcerers and something, and he doesn't really belong there. And it's really a beautiful fish out of water kung fu film.
Mm-hmm. Would it still be though like comedic action? Is that the
right
genre?
It's supposed to be. I mean, there are some moments where it's kind of like ooh, but for the most part, it's very comedic action. I mean, there are no blood spatters, there are no horrible, you know, heads exploding or stuff like that. There's no splatter porn. There's nothing
it's not horror, even though there are some horror elements in it.
I mean, it's supposed to be what a Chinese ghost story would look like, or a Chinese wuxia story would look like through the eyes of a Westerner, and it does a great job doing that.
I thought so. And that's why we can do it on Dragon Reel, because it's fantasy.
Exactly. And another great, I mean, I think it really sums up great when Jack basically confronts the group of his, you know, of his cronies and says, you know, what's really going on here? And his friend Wang says, you really want to know? And they say, and he goes, I can take it. And he says, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that
one. You know, it's such
a reasonable guy.
Right. And it really kind of drives it home that, no, we don't know what's going on because this isn't our culture. Wang has some of the best descriptions in the movie, but especially when he sits there and talks about, like, Lopan and the whole, like, history thing, and he says, you know, these are ghost stories we tell each other as children and then grow up and pretend they didn't happen.
2,258 years ago, the first sovereign emperor, Chen Ji Wang Anijima, he subjugated Lopan, made him of no flesh. An evil dream.
Get to the goddamn point, Egg.
In order to be whole again, he had to find this certain girl of his prophecy and marry her to appease the god of the east. But to appease the emperor, he had to kill her.
So that's the whole thing of what's really going on behind this.
Right.
Behind Lopan.
That's actually the summation of the actual ghost story of the Wuxia part.
Right. Right.
I like the part about the potion when he says, is this...
What's in the flask, Egg? Magic potion?
Yeah.
Thought so. Good. What do we do, drink it?
Yeah.
Good. Thought so.
Followed by one of the more awkward moments of the movie.
What do we do, drink it? Yes.
When they're in the elevator.
Yeah.
I don't know why. That's one of my favorite lines. In the
feeling really good. Kind of invincible.
Yeah. So what was in it? What was in that potion?
Oh, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't remember what Egg completely says are the ingredients, but...
I don't think he says what's in the potion. I think he says what he's got with him. It's, you know, six demon bag and all that
stuff. That's within the six demon bag.
Well, he also does, like somebody asks him what's in the potion, and he kind of waffles his way through it, or gets poetic, I should say.
Mm. Well, one of the interesting things about the movie, I thought, was there were no, at least for 1986, really big stars in the film. Like, right. Kurt Russell was kind of a big name, and he wasn't really... much of a name at that point, but if you look down the list of everyone else in the movie, it is a who's who of Asian American actors, and yep. I mean, you've got, you know, the legendary James Hong is playing the main villain, and mm-hmm. you know, of course he's always amazing, and so he was really brought it to that movie.
I like how his first line in the movie is "Huh?"
I'm sorry, but his first line in the movie is "Ah!" Oh, okay. His late roars out of his mouth.
Okay. So my favorite.
Wait! You know what? You know who else is in this movie?
Kim Cattrall. Kim Cattrall. Kim Cattrall.
I love Kim Cattrall.
I think you're overlooking the greatest action star of the 1980s, though, who also appeared in this movie.
Who was that?
In a fairly prominent role.
Oh, Al
the
Young?
Legendary Al Young.
Oh yeah, Al Young shows up in this one.
Oh.
You've seen him in Die Hard.
Action, it's not complete.
You've seen him in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes.
Who was he?
He was. He's the most recognizable guy you see in every movie that you never know his name.
Oh. Okay.
He's got a million credits.
Okay.
If there's really an Asian does. Guy in an action movie.
You need somebody who's slightly balding but has long hair and kind of a beard like the kind that I have, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of a Van Dyke-ish look.
He was in Lethal Weapon. He was in...
pretty much
everything. Yeah, I forgot he was in Lethal Weapon.
He's
usually playing...
Right, he's the guy who forgot more about pain than you and I will ever know.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's usually playing Asian guy with machine gun.
Yeah.
He was kind of in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you guys think that this movie stands the test of time? I'm just wondering.
Oh, God, yes. And I got to tell you, I own the 20th Anniversary Edition DVD, and I popped it in, and within 5 minutes, the rest of the world had disappeared because I was once again swept back to mid-1980s San Francisco as the Pork Chop Express rolled in to drop
Pork
off
his Chop Express. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you know, I think it's definitely a movie of its time. Like, you wouldn't produce... If you produced the movie today, it would not be any big deal now because a lot of the ideas and things that really made that movie pop in the 80s are, you know, kind of
tropey.
Accepted things. Yeah, they're tropey things now. No, because
they worked then.
It's since then it's been saturated with the whole wirework kind of wuxia genre. Mm-hmm. Well, I hadn't seen anything like it before that. All I'd seen was, you know, some Bruce Lee movies, and that was my entire exposure to Chinese movies.
Right.
Well, it's not just the wuxia aspects, but also the idea of the white savior mythology, like, is not quite what it was in the 1980s. In the 1980s, the idea that Kurt Russell and his, you know, Jack Burton was not rolling in as the white savior character was incomprehensible to the studio.
Right, exactly. It was just why they had such a hard time marketing it. They couldn't figure out how to.
They said, "Well, he's not a very good hero. He's not really doing anything that's significant."
So in the commentary, Kurt Russell said that a week before release of the movie, somebody came up, one of his friends came up to him and said, "Aren't you in something that's coming out?" So there was like nothing. Nothing leading up to it.
It wasn't really promoted very well.
And that, I think that was on his press junket.
Yeah.
Yeah, the funny thing about it was that I don't remember seeing a trailer outside of the theater for this movie. Hmm. I don't remember seeing it on TV.
I heard about it from word of mouth.
So, yeah.
And that's unusual because the studios, when we were growing up in our teens, right? Some of us were in our teens. Maybe Bill was younger than that.
No. Was Bill younger? Could that be?
I think so.
In 86, you were, 10, 11?
They would always advertise, commercials on TV would be for movies. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. Is that still how movies are advertised now?
You know, most of the trailers that I see, I don't see on television. I see on
the internet.
On the internet, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the 80s, the internet, I mean, we didn't know the internet was going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also didn't watch, I don't watch regular TV anymore. I watch things like Netflix.
We've changed the way we watch TV. That's why I asked if commercials are still.
But they're still on. I mean, like when I watched the Super Bowl, they promoted two movies that I remember, you know, and things like that. So.
Yeah, the way that trailers were made in the 80s, you would find completely boring now.
Mm-hmm.
They actually talked about what the movie was about and kind of set up the story.
Yes.
I mean, DVD extras.
That was the origin of the original In a World.
Yeah.
Came from was from the 1980s.
Pete, you do that really well.
Thank you.
That's, I mean, you could be like a professional. Yeah.
Because as it seems, at a time when things are not what they appear.
One man rose above.
One woman. One man and two women. Now more than ever.
One demon child.
One man, one woman, two goats.
And a small furry animal called Bob.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, Sharon. That the one of the other things I read about the movie when I was getting ready to come on and talk to you guys was they knew when they were producing it that the Golden Child was going to be released right around the same time.
So they were actually rushed
to finish Big Trouble in Little China in order to beat Golden Child in the theaters. And I went and looked at them on IMDb.
Because Golden Child comes out. That came out like later that year or something, didn't it?
Yeah, like 2 months later.
Ah, okay.
And I looked at them on IMDb. The Asian actors in both movies are almost identical. Like, it's all the same people. It's Victor Wong and James Wong. all the same people.
Are in one or in
the other.
And, that is really interesting.
They had a lot of
Al Leong.
Yeah, so they were all there. So it was. So they were rushing to finish Big Trouble in time to meet that. And then, of course, the studio wasn't liking it, and they thought, okay, well, you know, Eddie Murphy's going to crush us in a couple of months anyway. I feel like poor James Carpenter really had everything stacked against him on this one.
He was kind of fringy and mavericky already. He was known for Halloween and The Thing and stuff like that, Escape from New York, so I don't think...
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much they were putting behind him in the first place.
So I don't want to take questions away from my husband in chair number one, but I am dying to know, because Pete, you've done theater, and Bill, you've done a lot of stuff with cosplay and all of that. How was the fighting in this one? Because being blind, Chris was describing it, but he was just telling me, like, yeah, they're doing martial arts. So he wasn't really you know, it's kind of like the way he describes dance. It's just like, he'll tell me, they're dancing. So
it's not so much the fight choreography as it is the way they shot it.
And yeah. You liked that?
It's fairly standard fight choreography, but the way that they shot it made it seem a lot more dynamic.
Like people flying around,
so
coming
the,
down
this
from
was
light.
The first movie that I saw with a lot of jump cuts in a fight. And that that big fight in the alleyway between the Chang Sing and the Wing Kong had a lot of really short scenes so that they could get the, you know, the guy breaking the person's arm, you know, bending it backwards. And, you know, the really quick, you know, here's a stabbing, here's a killing, here's a, you know, guy jumping
right, the guy's fighting their way into a shop and then getting kicked through the stained, or the picture window, that
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of the really great sequences, too, where they did do wider shots, they would have sort of the stunt people and the extras fighting it out in the background, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. The
right.
camera stayed focused mostly on Jack Burton, who, of course, is, you know, like, trying to pull something out of his pocket, or, like, he's tripped on something.
He brought a knife to a gunfight.
Right, so you're watching him fumble, and, like, there's crazy stuff going on in the background, but, you know, it's in the background, so it doesn't, it doesn't really seem as epic as, it makes the scene seem epic, but you're not paying attention to it, you're watching him
right.
fumbling.
being kind of a buffoon through the whole thing. My favorite part of that, of course, being when he knocks himself unconscious at the beginning of the big fight.
Oh, yeah.
at the wedding, at Lopin's wedding. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think my favorite is the warehouse fight, because you see him, and he's shooting a gun, and then he's, like, knocks back, and he's trying to pick something else up, and like, you just see Dennis
Stone. Oh, he goes down,
like,
to his boot to pull out his thing.
Yeah. you see the hero jumping back and forth, like, running back and forth across the screen, and the bad guys are flying around.
Yes.
You never really see any of the action, but then he comes, you know, he finally gets himself together. He's like, and of course it's over.
It's interesting to me that you guys are, like, you know, completely passionate about the fight scenes. And, well, I guess being blind, you know, I'm just like, yeah, okay, there's a fight scene. But I love the scenes between Kim Cattrall and Kurt Russell.
Oh, and that's another thing I'm glad you reminded me. I wanted to bring up is it's got the best
Rappy repartee.
It has the best exit scene.
Oh, where he just, like, goes?
Where he's about to leave, and Margo says, Jesus, aren't you even going to kiss her? And he looks at her and goes, nope.
No.
And she goes, I'll see you around, Burton.
Yeah, wow.
And it's such a great exit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those wonderful things, especially since they establish at the beginning of the movie, Jack Burton's missing. That, and I love the soundtrack.
So John that was also John Carpenter.
That out of the park. Yeah.
It's very 80s.
Yes. Very synthy.
Yeah, very synthy, and I think it kind of reminded me of Tangerine Dream a little bit with their the Legend soundtrack, and they did something else that I just recently saw, and now I can't remember what it was.
It reminded me a little bit more of, like, Vangelis doing Blade Runner personally, but then again, I'm obsessed with Blade Runner, so that's part of the problem.
There you go. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's released subsequent albums of just made up theme music that doesn't go to anything.
Hmm.
So, being such an enormous fan of his musical work, I bought all of those.
Nice.
Very cool.
Including all the Coupe de Ville albums?
Yeah, I think I do have everything. Like, it just, there's
nice.
Like, I'm like, I'll listen to it and I'll be like, wow, this is a great theme song. What was this to? Oh, yeah. Nothing.
Nothing.
Now, one of the interesting things that I'd heard as an apocryphal story about this movie was that it was originally supposed to be the second Buckaroo Banzai movie. It was supposed to be Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League.
Hmm.
Because Lopan is the bad guy from Buckaroo Banzai. You know, and mind you, that was just, like I said, it's apocryphal. It's just one of those things that was bouncing around the internet for years and years and years. But once I actually got to read kind of the background, I didn't realize that it had gone through so much iteration just to make it to where it was. And
well,
why
it was completely
and how it managed to work so well, yeah.
You know what made it different?
David Lopin style!
you gotta play more of that, because it's, like, so cool.
I'll get in trouble if I play more of that.
Exactly.
Oh.
But really,
I thought that was funny.
You know what they'll say if I play the whole thing? They'll say this.
Son of a bitch must pay.
Bill had really touched upon something, though, that really, the fact that James Hong is what kind of cements this movie together.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he's so good in the role of Lo Pan, even in, like, the 900-year-old man makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Oh, yeah.
You were not put on this world to get it, you know?
Yeah.
He's such a great crotchety old man. It's just so, God, he's good.
James Hong really is the best. I saw him in a Columbo episode once, and he played a bit part as like somebody's butler. And I was like, that is the greatest butler I think I've ever seen.
He's in like 5 minutes of every show in the 70s.
And you're just like, nailed it!
Like, how many episodes of MASH is he in playing a different person? Because the average MASH viewer is like, yeah, it's a completely different guy. I don't know.
I think he was in Magnum PI also.
Probably.
Yeah.
I like the opening of Big Trouble in Little China.
With the lawyer's office on this B. Okay.
No, the lawyer's office, you know.
Well, you know, they made them add that later. Apparently in the original film that was not going to be there, and the studio heads watched it and said, we don't get this because the main character's not really very heroic. He seems like kind of a, you know, a dork. How do we get this, like, you know, people to like go into the movie and you know, feel like this guy who's supposed to be the hero is really the hero. Mm-hmm. And James Cameron apparently, John Carpenter. John Carpenter apparently thought that was kind of a dumb idea, but he went, yeah, all right, fine. We'll just throw something where they're like, oh yeah, this guy was really great. And then go, you know,
we are in his debt.
Yeah. Then make the movie sort of a flashback from there. And honestly, I like that better. Because it establishes from the beginning that, you know, the crazy sort of tone of the movie, the sort of staid, like, mm-hmm. you know, concrete world of the lawyer's office. And then he just brings in that little magic at the end, and you're mm-hmm. like, it really sets up how the movie's going to work. It sets up that world. So you go into it expecting, you know, that things are going to seem normal, and then something crazy is going to happen, and I think it really adds a lot to the film. So I'm a fan of that part, even though I understood that he was the sidekick all along.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Well, should I admit that this is the first time that I ever saw Big Trouble in Little China?
I don't believe that's true, but you probably forgot the last time you saw it.
No, I don't think I did.
It seems like the kind of thing we probably made you watch in college.
Okay, well... If I did see it in college, I don't remember.
Kind of my point.
Okay, it's good enough that this is the first time I really remember seeing it. And the beginning helped me to understand the whole story.
Well, it does kind of set the tone. So
yeah.
And see, I don't know if I would have figured out on my own who was the main character, because Chris told me when we were watching it. He said
that it was Jack Burton.
But I was sort of thinking, I'm like, I don't think this is the main character, because he's a bit of a, you know,
a boob.
I was gonna say boob.
He's the boobie.
You know, so I was just feeling it like
I'm still thinking about that.
I want to say it like the witch and Wizard of Oz, like no.
There you go.
You know, and she says, your dog bit her? You bit your dog? No. Oh, gosh.
No.
I also liked the music. But, you know, I was wondering if Moonlighting came out after this movie. Because
around the same time.
I was just curious, because some of that very fast... I mean, I couldn't even always follow... how fast Kim Cattrall was talking. And
oh my God, and she's so machine gun in her delivery. It's amazing.
I know.
Yeah.
I totally love her.
Here you go. Here's a little Kim.
You gonna give us a little Kim?
I can't pay today, okay?
How can I? I need all my cash from Mao Yin.
And it's gonna cost. She's got green eyes.
Oh no, seriously? Well, there's an extra to these people. It's like leather bucket seats. It's double the price.
What people?
That's not dehumanizing at all.
No. No, not in the least.
Wow.
That's like a backhanded support of human trafficking there.
What do you mean? What do you mean, these people?
Right.
Not to be excessively focused on Kim Cattrall, but I have to for a minute.
Yeah.
Her voice is very, to me, and I am an expert on voices. I mean, no, but it's because of seeing her so much in Sex and the City.
See, okay. I just remember her as Lassie.
Oh, my gosh. But her voice is very different, too.
I just remember her as the original Savick.
No, you're wrong. You're incorrect.
She's not the original Savick?
Nope, she's the second Savick.
The second Savick?
No, the second Savick was like Kirstie Alley. The first one that was the first Kim Cattrall.
First Savick was Kirstie Alley. The second Savick was
Kim
Cattrall.
Oh, my gosh. Are we going to have a war now? A geek war? Oh, my goodness.
A Savick off?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're so Undiscovered Country, right. I stand corrected.
But I can tell you one thing about Kim Cattrall.
Don't panic. It's only me, Gracie Law.
There. That you shouldn't panic when she comes into the room.
Don't panic. No
panic. Don't panic. It's just me, Gracie Law.
Yes. And there's a problem with her face.
Not her. She's trouble. She's got green eyes. Oh, you know how rare that is? How can you tell from here?
That's how you should have interrupted.
Of all the people that Jack focuses on in an airport, it's the one person there that Wang knows.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how you should have called me in the beginning. Trouble. I would have accepted that.
Chris, we're both wrong. She's Lieutenant Valeris in the Undiscovered Country. She's not Samick.
What?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, people are probably going to listen to this podcast.
People are shouting at their podcast players.
They're going, no, no.
Okay, first off, we're a fantasy podcast, not a sci-fi podcast, so back off.
Yeah, you want to get your Samicks right, you go to sci-fi, you slice of sci-fi.
Yeah, but we like sci-fi too. So what was your favorite part of the movie, Chris?
My favorite part of the movie.
I was sitting next to you.
I don't know. I got to think about that.
Well, then we should.
You know,
ask.
I like the intro. I thought the intro really kind of laid it out.
No, I already picked the intro. You
not that
the
intro. Jack's intro.
Oh, Jack's intro. Okay.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes.
So there was a thing, actually, that I really wanted to see in this movie that didn't get paid off.
Okay.
So they laid this story thread out, and they never closed it.
Which story thread?
I wanted to see Wang cut the bottle in half.
Oh, yeah.
They just let it go.
Well, you're not supposed to think that Wang is this badass martial artist until it becomes necessary to show that he is this badass martial artist.
But he seems genuinely confused when it doesn't work.
Yeah, he looks genuinely shocked. Well, no wonder I couldn't cut it in half. My mind and body, what was it, my mind and soul are going north and south?
Yes. Robin Curtis was the second Savick, by the way.
Yes, there you go.
You looked that up, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
He had to.
You think I could let that go?
Yeah, I guess not.
So, yeah, I think they felt that the bottle cutting thing was probably superfluous after he had the like flying sword fight with the Rain was the guy who was fighting there. Yeah,
but it's just was still hanging there for the rest of the movie. I'm like,
plus he does that turnaround back shot with the sword right into Rain as he's flying through the air.
Yeah, actually, I saw an interview with the guy who played Rain. And apparently no one had bothered to tell him that the movie was supposed to be funny. And,
oh, my gosh!
He only discovered that in the sequence where they're having their big epic duel at the end, and Dennis Dunn turns around and gives him, like, the eyebrow raise. Yeah. And suddenly he was like, wait, something's going on here.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think Carter Wong kind of played it serious enough, serious for action.
Yeah.
I think all three of them did. I think all three of them had to be as serious and deadpanny as possible.
So when they first showed Carter Wong, I thought it was Jean-Claude Van Damme's Asian half brother.
Bolo Yeung's understudy. It's because they have the same hairdo, dude. That's the only reason. Come on.
No, they're very similar.
When we were watching the commentary, who were they saying was just a beautiful man? Do you remember? It was either Thunder, Rain, or wait, what are the three guys?
Thunder, Rain, Lightning, and Rain.
It was one of them. One of those guys.
Probably
Rain, because Peter Kwong's a pretty good looking guy.
Okay. If I don't recall.
You know the thing I do recall from the commentary. I can tell you how many songs Kurt Russell's son can play on the guitar.
I can tell you that Kurt Russell just recently picked up. His son, a pair of those moccasins.
Moccasins, yes. Nice pair of moccasins from that shop there.
I can tell you that Susie Pye has one of the longest necks in all of Hollywood.
The commentary was not very informative on the movie.
It was just more on a personal level.
They did give us a great background on James Hong, that he was a teenager and performing in the USO shows, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to say, too. I personally liked the commentary. you know, more than I, mm-hmm. I liked the movie.
Well, you know what else we forgot about in this
what?
Movie?
What did we forget?
So another thing that the movie just completely forgot, Tanya.
Wait, who is Tanya?
Exactly.
The girl who Gracie comes to save.
Was it Tanya?
Yeah.
Kara.
Yeah, her. Sorry, I said the wrong name.
We know that she brought her to her home / office and that she's staying there to it's a sanctuary thing. That's all.
Yeah, but you know, it just was like you've introduced a character, you made her seem kind of important, and then just kind of forgot about it.
So you're saying that's your plot hole?
I don't think it's they made her kind of important. I think the important thing about that was the fact that there's a reason why Gracie's in Chinatown.
Right. Right.
And I think that's what's putting her there is the fact that she helps refugees and stuff like that. Because mm-hmm. they cut out the whole part where she was raised in China, her dad's a missionary, you know, and all this other stuff, and that's why she fits the. Mm-hmm. She fits the prophecy.
But the funny
because her father's a holy man and she was in Hunan and all this other stuff.
Wait, how do you know that, Pete? They didn't tell us that.
That's deleted in the deleted scenes on the DVD.
Oh. Yeah,
but you know what? That's about the same time she disappears, they introduce another character for almost no reason except that she brings in a lot of exposition like this.
Margo?
You mean the David Lopan that's chairman of the National Orient Bank and owns the Wing Kong Import-Export Trading Company, but who's so reclusive that no one's even laid eyes on this guy in years?
Who the hell are you, anyway?
My thoughts exactly. Wait, where did she come from? Like, she came
Gracie.
In with Gracie. Yeah, I know.
She's
she
a
came
Gracie
in with
Law.
Right, I know she came in with Gracie Law. But you could have had, I don't know, you could have had Tanya do that. I don't really know.
How would Tara do that? Tara. She was...
Or Tara, whatever the F her name is.
Tara just stepped off an airplane. She's never been in the country before. You're going to have her, like... Exposit on
no,
the Wing Kong exchange.
No,
created?
She couldn't.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, she couldn't.
Well, she couldn't, but she could have done something else. I don't know.
You know what? Okay. I think that's.
So,
I think
Eddie,
Chris is.
Eddie was only there to get slapped around, okay? But he was still popping.
Eddie was
and he had one of
the
finest suits I've ever seen in my entire
Eddie
life.
He definitely was a whipping boy in this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
You know, Chris, I really think that's a tiny, tiny nitpick. I mean.
So, as a curious side note, both Dennis Dunn and Victor Wong end up in John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness.
Yes. Yeah, I remember seeing that and seeing Dennis Dunn and going, why does he look so familiar? I never
Well, the funny thing was, the only reason I went to see Prince of Darkness because it had Victor Wong and Dennis Dunn in it. I was like, ooh, I wonder if this is kind of a subtle way to make Big Trouble in Little China 2. It's a supernatural thriller, and it's got Wang Ji and Shen. I'm going to have to go check that out.
Did you remember your favorite part yet?
No, I don't have a favorite part. The whole movie's my favorite part. Here's my favorite part, right here.
Good answer.
When some wild-eyed, 8-foot-tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against a barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye, and he asks you if you've paid your dues, well, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton always says at a time like that. Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail.
That is, without a doubt, my favorite part of the movie.
Okay. Well, I like that line a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
So who wouldn't like
so
that?
So I did not realize why they called it the Pork Chop Express. And then, like, this time watching it, I noticed that they were taking pigs out of the truck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Come on, Chris. I can't even see it. I realized that.
Yeah, Sharon got it in the first try. And I'm like, pork chops.
There's pork chops in the truck. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. See? So I'm smarter than I look.
You'd have to be.
I don't know why I'm using that voice.
Oh, snap.
Oh, because it's my
face
again, right?
I don't
know
necessarily that you're smarter than you look. You married Chris.
Oh.
So she's smarter than
dang.
I look.
We both got slammed, Chris.
This was another favorite part.
Ready? Follow the leader. 1, 2, 3. We may be trapped.
That was another favorite part.
Hide? They've only seen me. Hide.
All right, Pete, I don't think you've told us your favorite scene.
I have to go with Chris's statement that this whole movie is pretty much my favorite scene.
Oh, wow.
I don't think this movie became so quotable for me.
Yes.
It was probably the first movie that was fully quotable to me because I'd watched it so many times having owned the VHS tape. But if I have to narrow it down to one favorite scene, it's when the thing comes out of the hole in the bog of the underground trees.
No.
And
what will come out no more?
Exactly. What? Huh?
You'll come out no more. What? Fantastic. It's just such a great moment because that, not only did Kurt Russell sell that, it's just such a great moment. And it's just after that whole thing that where Egg explains how like 1,000 years ago, the world turned upside down.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh God, what a wonderful moment.
So do you quote this movie a lot in everyday life?
Let me put it this way. My friends and I know it so well that if I do the one finger up to heaven hand sign, they will all return it to me.
Okay.
And I can be 100 yards away from them and they will return it to me.
Okay, you guys are going to have to show me this sometime. And then,
okay.
And also, I want to use, I have never in my life heard the word wooshy. And you guys have used that word.
Wooshy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't ever hear that word before, so I feel
it's
like...
It's just a subgenre of Chinese theater movies that involves special effects, essentially.
Oh, okay.
It's supernatural. There's a heavy supernatural element. There's a lot of color. There's a lot of wire work. It's stuff like that.
See, so now I'm going to try to use that word in everyday conversation, and people are going to think...
What's wooshy?
No. No, say it correctly. Wushu?
Isn't that a kind of pork?
Wuxia.
Wuxia.
I've always heard it pronounced wuxia. Is wuxia. That not okay. Right?
I'm going to have to go to Bill for this one.
I think it's closer to xia. Wuxia.
Wuxia.
But, wuxia. Yeah, it's Chinese doesn't necessarily correlate one-to-one with English spellings.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was actually... going to recommend you guys check out the monkey movie. There's a Journey to the West, the monkey movies that have come out recently, the Monkey King 1 and the Monkey King 2. The second one is fantastic. But then Chris pointed out to me that Sharon would probably have trouble with the subtitles. And,
Yep.
But for anyone listening, Monkey King 2 is delightful. It's a great, like, similar movie to Big Trouble in Little China. A little more serious, but not too much more. Vampires and monkey people smashing things.
Well, you know what? We'll do that. And if Sharon says she's having trouble with the movie, you know what I'm going to tell her?
What?
You are not brought upon this world to get it.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Harsh, man.
Harsh.
Really harsh.
It's one of those days. I'm sorry, my darling.
Yeah.
I feel it. So, Bill, what was your favorite part?
My favorite part, it is, yeah, like you guys said, it is so hard to choose. There's so many great bits in the movie. As I mentioned, I'm a huge fan of the soundtrack. So for me, just when the credits roll and he starts actually belting out the Big Trouble in Little China theme song.
Yes.
I love that.
Wait, that wasn't Depeche Mode?
You can feel the wind rising, baby?
Right. <yeah. laughs> Sounds like Oingo Boingo, but it is, in fact, John Carpenter.
Exactly.
But,
his band, the Coupe de Villes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's of the things I always remember, like the one of the visuals for me was the lightning coming down on the bolt, like riding down the actual bolt.
Oh,
of
yeah,
lightning,
sliding down the lightning, yeah.
Doing all that stuff. And which, of course, then became, you know, the inspiration for the Mortal Kombat character, Raiden.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And I played that game obsessively in high school, largely because I saw it in the arcade and I was like, oh, this is so awesome. There's finally a Big Trouble in Little China video game.
Well, you know, they did make a movie of it. You may want to check that out, but no. I'm not going to pay you back for the hours it takes you to do that.
But, in terms of individual scenes, one of my other favorite sequences in it is when you finally have the big showdown between Egg Shen and Lo Pan, and they both got like their weird like video game that they play.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They pull back and they pull out like these crystals, and they're like
Victor Wong is doing like these big gestures to like steer his, you know, giant.
Yeah, but if you notice,
avatar.
He's doing like the two thumb movements.
Yeah, well, that's
and
what
they didn't
Lopan.
Have video game controllers with the two thumbs yet.
No, that was Lopan doing that. That
yeah, was, Lopan that was basically time. He had like a yeah he apparently had an early Nintendo Entertainment System gamepad that he was fighting.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it was a fantastic sequence of just that struggle of the magic, and they're both there fighting each other. And after all the buildup, it results in nothing.
Yeah, I just
disgusted by that.
I want to bring up the fact that he's not playing an NES system. He's playing Rock and Sock 'em Robots.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
And you'll notice that the two avatars are the color of the Rock and Sock 'em Robots.
Yeah, I did notice the color of the red blue, but I didn't.
That's kind of
I didn't
neat.
Make that association. So yeah, yeah, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of
once again, Pete opens up a whole new door of understanding.
Yeah, right.
For a movie. Did I tell you about Willow?
It's changed your universe.
No,
Pete completely changed my view of. I hated Mad Morgan. Hated him. And he goes, and Pete goes, he's Sanjiro. He's it's like, oh, right, okay.
But that changed. That was like an epiphany for you.
Yojimbo is what you said.
Yeah, he totally is.
And that changed
and that
your whole perception.
And that completely changed my perception of the movie. I was like, oh, yeah, he is.
I'm glad I could help.
Yep.
It brings me joy. Shares me with Nachas.
Sharon did not tell us her favorite part of the movie yet. She's like, she's kind of.
She said it was. She said
right
it was
now.
The first part where in the allure.
Yeah,
office.
I did. Oh, that was not what I was signaling.
Oh, okay.
For.
She started. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
Actually. Well, that was such an unmonumental part that I didn't think that could be her favorite part. But
that's
you know,
a great sequence.
It does. You know, they do start small. That's how they always begin.
I liked all the parts with Kim Cattrall. You know, I just.
With who, Sharon?
Kim Cattrall.
Who?
Kim Cattrall. Kim Cattrall. Sorry.
You were
I really
like. And that was a pretty good movie.
I really, 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 really like Kim Cattrall.
I like the fact that when they're swimming out, she surfaces and like she starts pulling people up to find out what happened to people.
Oh yeah.
Where's Margo?
Yes. Right. Yes. Where's Eddie? Every person she asks is the next person in line.
Yes. Yes, and even though I don't get humor, I got that part. That was funny.
That was funny.
Yes. Sometimes I get humor.
You do.
I feel kind of invincible.
Me too. I got a very positive attitude about this.
Good, me too.
Yeah.
So apparently the little hand sign that the Qing Songs give each other is something about the Ming versus the Qing dynasty.
Really?
Yeah, that apparently that the to overthrow the Mings, if every Qing lifted just one finger, they could overthrow the Ming.
Huh, okay.
And so that's where the original hand sign came from, apparently.
Is this in the IMDb trivia or something?
No, actually, this was I was hanging out with a bunch of Kung Fu practitioners in Canada, and one of them brought that up when I made the hand sign.
Oh, okay.
That's yeah,
neat.
So.
Just for the curious, the Chinese characters in the main title translate to evil spirits make a big scene in little spiritual state.
They sure do.
Did you translate that? Or?
No, I did not. That's on the IMDb trivia.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
Talk about travail. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So what effect did this have on John Carpenter? What did he make after this that showed that he was now doing his own sort of Maverick thing?
Prince of Darkness, I think. Prince of Darkness
was
came out in 87.
Okay.
Yeah. Not oh, as... he does soundtrack for Stranger Things.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
You're right. Prince Stranger of Darkness things. was right yes. after. I did not know that he did Starman.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he did a few things with Kurt Russell before Big Trouble in Little China. He did The Thing. He did Escape from New York. Elvis, was that with Kurt Russell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was Kurt Russell. So I guess they were already buds?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did he make Kurt Russell?
No, Kurt Russell was a Disney kid.
He was the computer that wears tennis shoes.
He was the, God, he was a kid in some Western, and I can't think what it was now.
Oh, there's The Legend of Jesse point. James.
That could be it.
Travels of Jamie McFeeters.
Okay.
Just looking at his IMDb page. I mean, he's got a lot of credits as a kid, but you know.
Right,
I don't know.
And so then he was the computer that wore tennis shoes, and then he transitions. I think
I'm not sure that he made him as Elvis. I remember watching the Elvis TV movie. Maybe he escaped from New York. Maybe he escaped from New York is what made him. I don't know.
I think it'd probably be The Thing.
The Elvis
that was a pretty big movie.
Elvis TV movie?
I remember wanting to see The Thing when it came out, but I was only like 12.
Like Elvis Presley?
I actually didn't get to see, like Elvis Presley. I didn't actually get to see The Thing in the theater. I saw it on HBO. Still scared the hell out of me.
You know, so Kurt Russell was Elvis. And,
okay, I'm going to watch that now.
So now we're going to watch that. I have to say that in terms of people playing Elvis, I am really disappointed that Billy Zane never got to play Elvis.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Because he would have been perfect.
Can he do the lip thing, though? He's got to get that sneer.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I can't remember him ever doing it, but, you know, he would probably take to it really well. So.
Probably.
So anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about rating the movie.
Let's do that.
I mean, we should rate.
I think we should rate the movie.
I think Sharon thinks we should rate the movie.
I'm not going first, though.
Oh my God, why not?
I'll go second. I don't want to go first.
All right, Bill, as guest, you're going to go first.
Sounds good.
So, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Big Trouble in Little China?
Oh, I would give this a solid platinum piece. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. So definitely a 5.
Ooh, it's a 5.
If not more, I'm a big fan of this one. It was incredibly innovative at its time, and I think not appreciated at the time because of that. But as a result, it's sort of aged like a fine wine. It is still
like fine wine.
It's kept all of its character, right? So it's got that sort of 1980s terroir, if you will, that like really gives it. You know, that the something that comes from that certain era of entertainment.
Something.
But at the same time, it's matured in a way that, or at least society has matured in a way that we've kind of finally caught up to it. And I think that really makes it even better than it was when it first came out. Mm-hmm. I think it's, not only was it really great at the time, and too good for its time, but now it's just right at that level where it's good, and we've caught up to it. So I'm a big fan of this one. I love the actors. A lot of just Hollywood legends are in that movie. The soundtrack is amazing. The scripting is really fantastic. I think they hit it out of the park. So I'm a big fan.
All right. Wow. Well said. Well reasoned. Pete, mm-hmm. on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Big Trouble in Little China?
I am going to pull one of those things where I get to say everything that Bill said. And I'm also going to give it a 5 gold pieces.
Wow. Oh. Okay. Sharon?
Wow.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Big Trouble in Little China?
Okay, everyone's going to throw things at me. But,
well, we're not going to throw things at you. We just know you're inherently wrong.
You're not in the same... Okay. I need to preface this with just remember that I couldn't see any of the fight scenes at all. So all of the cool visual effects that you guys loved were just blah, blah, blah for me. So 3 gold pieces. Don't kill me!
It's not that we're gonna.
Just for me, I'm sorry.
So
it's not that I'm angry. It's just that I'm deeply.
Disappointed.
In other words, better than Excalibur.
Yeah. Oh my God! I think what did I give Excalibur?
So you liked Big Trouble in Little China more than I like Excalibur.
Yes.
Wait, what?
Yes. It's true. Ooh,
that's what I'm hearing. True.
What did you give Excalibur?
I gave it a solid 2.
Yeah.
I mean,
I remember it well.
And all
that was
one
of
his first one.
This is actually episode 28?
Yeah.
Yes.
How long have we been doing this?
At least 27 episodes.
a long time.
But how does that break down into real time?
So I'm sorry, guys. I think I could watch it again. Maybe if somebody would narrate the fight scenes,
narrated the fight scenes.
Yeah, but this is what he said. They're fighting.
No, that
how
is
exciting
not what I
is
said.
That?
Oh
you
God.
Know,
you must be drunk.
No, I'm not. I'm literally not drunk.
I think we all are.
I've had no alcohol. Oh no, I did have some rum chata in my tea.
Yeah, you had some rum chata. I had some wine.
No,
this
but
is not going to go well.
I think if there was if there was a person that would be willing to narrate the fight scenes, I would change my rating. If Kurt Russell wants to come over and narrate this movie for me, I'll change my rating. But as a blind person, it was just a bit, boring. The speaking parts were great, and that's why I gave it the 3. So, Chris, what would you rate this movie?
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces.
I really enjoy the movie. I've seen it a few times, not as many times as Bill or Pete.
Probably not.
I think if you added all of the time I've seen end to end, I think you might come up with about 8 hours worth of viewing. So that means I've probably seen it about 5 times.
So still, what would you rate this movie on a scale?
And I gotta say that I disagree that everything holds up. I think that the music sounds very 80s. It places it squarely in its time period, and I don't think the music. I think it's good for 1986, and I think it's good for this movie, but I don't think it's great for a modern action movie. I don't think that equates to...
So Bill's analogy of...
It wasn't a modern action movie.
And that's exactly the point. It's not... I mean, you're defeating your argument on that one.
It's a squarely dated soundtrack. And
well, I'll grant that it's dated, but what were you expecting from a 1980s? You're going to sit there and say that about all the things from the... If we watch the Magic Sword, are you going to say, well, it was a squarely 50s soundtrack?
Yeah, I might.
Well, I think it's not just that. It's also that it's a movie set in the 80s, and you wouldn't be able to create that 1980s feel. You wouldn't create the same sensation of the setting.
Well, Bill, hold that thought. Put a pin in that. I'm coming back to it.
All right.
And I think the effects are good for 86. I don't think they're really earth-shattering now. I think the movie is good. I really enjoy watching it. I'll give it a solid 4 gold pieces.
Okay, fair enough. I just didn't realize that we were taking it into account all modern movies from now on, all modern fantasy cinematography.
We have comments on other things, whether they hold up or not.
And the effect,
oh no, it held up.
I think for me the music is of its time, and that's what you want in a movie that has, like, if we were going to make a period movie that's set in the 80s, you wouldn't want it to be music from 2018. That would sound weird. And similarly, I think the effects, you're right, in this day and age of CGI, we do crazy things with effects. And this was, just before we sort of began crossing.
Right. When I evaluate a movie, I will I take into account how it felt at the time. But I also take into account, if I'm going to show, a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old this movie, what are they going to think of this movie, too?
Clearly, we have to find a 10 or 12 year old.
I can tell you what my 16-year-old thought.
Tell me.
He loved it.
He really enjoyed it.
Good.
Yeah.
So
I was going to ask you that earlier.
Now, that thought that Bill had earlier, if you were going to make a movie now, so there was talk about a remake of Big Trouble in Little China.
It's happening. Dwayne Johnson's tagged to be Jack Burton.
Okay, this talk was going on at least a year and a half ago, and I hadn't heard anything since. Did you hear something recently?
I visited the site.
Okay.
And he's been attached to the project. So. Okay.
Yeah, other than his name being attached to it, I haven't heard anything about, filming.
Oh, I think I saw a 2020 release date also.
Okay. So that's a ways out.
So I think we should invite our listeners to definitely vote on this movie.
If you're putting The Rock as Jack Burton.
Yeah.
Who else are you going to put in this movie? Because you no longer have the white savior, because Dwayne Johnson is so multi-ethnic that he just doesn't, you just can't pigeonhole him.
Yeah, I think the other problem is Dwayne Johnson always comes off as sort of charismatic, and he's hard to believe as, I feel like he'd be hard to believe as the incompetent, sort of bumbling guy who is also not that charming. I have a hard time imagining him not being charming.
He did really well in the new Jumanji movie.
He did.
I haven't seen that, but I saw a movie called The Rundown, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, that was years ago. That was one of my favorite movies.
That was good.
And when I saw The Rundown, I thought, why isn't Dwayne Johnson in every movie?
Exactly. Exactly.
Why isn't Colin Firth in every movie? I mean, that would be my dream,
Colin Firth and Dwayne Johnson, forget it.
But Are we doing for our next movie? Are we doing Dune?
So Bill is going to choose the next movie. So what are we going to watch next, Bill?
All right. Well, you know, like I said, since Monkey is out, the Monkey King is out. I feel like my other classic favorite fantasy movie is Conan the Destroyer.
Wow.
Which is really one of the ultimate Dungeons and Dragons movies. It's essentially just a module in movie form, and it's super cheesy, and but for that gaming aspect, I really think it's fantastic, and so I'm gonna put that one forward as the next one. I know you guys have done Conan the Barbarian already, so
yeah, that's great. I think a sequel for a movie that we've done is fantastic. Are you gonna say
it's Grace Jones, man? Grace Jones.
Are you gonna say it's a better D&D movie than the D&D movie?
Well,
you can't ask them to rate it now because
I think every other movie we've done is a better D&D movie than this movie.
I think that's true. Yes,
I think Farscape Matilda
is a better D&D movie.
All right, so until then, we are done. You can listen to the credits. If you would like to come on Dragon Reel as a guest host and talk about a movie that you are passionate about, please give us a call or contact us. You can't give us a call because we're not giving out a number. So
I was wondering why you said that.
Tweet us, follow us, get in touch with us on Facebook, email us. You can find all of this information in the credits music, post-show credits music. And until we meet again, keep it real.
Keep it real.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon, and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.